Right now, it's book report time. I'm reading a book a month. I'm actually ahead of pace this year. I will never catch Tim Kalishaw, who I think is on pace to read 55 books this year. But my goal is a book a month, or 12 a year. And I finished my October book a few nights ago. So I'm actually on pace to read 13. But as you know from the Musers, the podcast, a few weeks ago when we did our superstitions episode, I have a thing about the number 13. So I can't read 13 books this year, or 2026 will be full of bad luck.
That's so weird.
So I'm either going to have to stop at 12 or read 14. And I think I'm on pace to be able to read 14.
Okay.
So I've got two books to review for you here in this segment. My September book of the month and my October book of the month. My September book, Revenge of the Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell. I've read two other Gladwell books, The Tipping Point and Outliers, and I really enjoyed them a lot. I would say this is third on the list of the three of his that I've read, but I still enjoyed it. It's interesting. There's a lot here. It's Revenge of the Tipping Point, Overstories, Super Spreaders, and the Rise of Social Engineering. And there are many, many different chapters dealing with many, many different topics and stories. I can't recap them all. But what I found is interesting were a couple of the super spreader stories, and he talks about COVID. And back in 2020, the Marriott outbreak in Boston, which was believed to be at the heart of the spread of the virus in the United States. February 2020, a Biogen convention at the Marriott in Boston. And he goes into the study behind spreading a virus. Certain vocal cord structures don't produce as many particles, aerosol particles. And we discovered eventually that COVID was spread through the spreading of aerosol particles. And they did this test of about 200 people, a study. 34 of them had a vocal cord makeup to be super spreaders. 18 of those had the makeup to be super high spreaders, and everybody else was a low spreader or non-spreader. So it's thought that these super high spreaders are responsible for spreading a virus, and explains why you may probably have known somebody who had COVID, but their families didn't get it, even though they were living with them.
Yeah,
that's because those people weren't spreaders. We kind of always think that everybody spreads equally.
Oh, yeah.
But this study found out that there are super high spreaders. So all it takes is one super high spreader. They have this vocal cord structure, and they're usually very loud talkers.
Spit talkers.
Yeah. And so
Sylvester the cat, he'd be a super spreader.
So they think there was one or two of these people at that Biogen convention. They spread it to the 180 people there, and those people went back to their homes across America. And maybe a few of them were spreaders, and that's how it got going.
Wow.
So I didn't realize that there were different levels of spreading among people based on your vocal cords and how loudly you talked and things like that.
No, that's interesting.
He also wrote about the opioid crisis in America, and there were super spreaders of sorts. Purdue Pharma, which we all know was at the root of this, they targeted a few docs who they knew would write a ton of prescriptions. It was an epidemic caused by a few doctors. The top 1% of doctors who wrote a prescription for OxyContin accounted for 49% of all opioid doses. 1% accounted for 49%. And
jeez.
Purdue
Whoa.
Fueled this by handsomely rewarding those few doctors who were writing 1,000 times the OxyContin prescriptions as other doctors.
Jeez.
That's why we ended up with this crisis, because of a very few doctors that were writing these scripts like crazy.
For opioids?
For
dumb
opioids.
Question. I thought that's what you got when you said, why I'm watching Andy Griffith too long. So,
okay, dumb question. So all of them were prosecuted? This 1% that was identified and then jail time for
most of
all
them,
or most of them
from pharma, Purdue Pharma down to some of these really high writing doctors But it varied on the state. Certain states have laws against this.
Yeah.
And he goes into deep detail on all of that. And that was a pretty fascinating chapter. The chapter on Harvard athletics was interesting. On the women's rugby team, he's like, why does Harvard have a women's rugby team? Harvard competes in more Division I sports than any other university in the country. I did not know that.
Huh.
On a percentage basis, Harvard has four times as many student athletes as Michigan. And Gladwell shows that it's a way for Harvard to get around admissions and for them to help keep a certain demographic ratio at their school or help admit kids from extremely wealthy families to keep the money rolling in. So they make up all these niche sports like women's rugby. They just create a team and it serves as a veiled method of admitting students who might not meet their usual academic standards but who fit a particular socioeconomic profile.
Genius.
Huh. Well, that's good. Rich families need some more breaks.
Right, and they're getting them at Harvard.
Mark.
So Revenge of the Tipping Point, it's worth the read. It's interesting. It's not the best Malcolm Gladwell book I've ever read, but I enjoyed it. The book that I enjoyed more, though, was my October book of the month. This was given to me as a Christmas present by my nephew, and I finally got around to it, called The Tower, A Chronicle of Climbing and Controversy on Cerro Torre. I like this genre. I love anything to do with Everest or K2. I had never heard of Cerro Torre, but it is seen by climbers as the most difficult mountain in the world to climb. It's only 10,000 feet. It's not 27,000 feet like Everest. 10,000 feet in Argentina, in Patagonia, the southern tip of that country. And I'll post a picture of this on Twitter when we're done, this mountain, or you can Google it, Cerro Torre. It is a tower. It looks impossible to climb. It is straight up. It's a beast. Well, the author, Kelly Cordes, investigates the first claimed ascent of Cerro Torre back in 1959 by Italian Cesare Maestri and the Swiss Tony Egger. They claimed to have gone up the north side, but a lot of people have always doubted their claim. Egger fell to his death on the descent, and Cesare Maestri said he had the camera that we used to take a picture of us at the top. But subsequent parties that have climbed that route that they claimed to climb, and nobody was able to climb it, I think, until the 80s or 90s. They said that there is no evidence that anyone climbed above this snowfield about two-thirds of the way up. Maestri's description of what the route looked like on that final third of the ascent didn't match anything that anyone had ever encountered. There was a lot of ice climbing that needed to be done, and they didn't have ice climbing tools back in 1959. So his claim is almost certainly false. He did not make it to the top. They did not make it to the top. They probably made it two-thirds of the way up. There's also a mystery around the death of Egger. And in later years, in a book by Maestri, he included a picture of what he said was Egger on the climb, but the camera was lost, we thought. And the picture was actually determined to be Egger on the other side of the mountain down low, the opposite route that they claimed to have climbed. And I think the most damning evidence is that there were no bolts or hooks or anything found on the final third of the route that he supposedly climbed. And that's evidence that someone was there, because climbers can't remove these bolts and anchors on their way down on their descent, because they're using them on the descent to rappel. And so they leave all of this stuff on these climbs. And Maestri was extremely defiant about this. And the only thing he ever said when asked, did you really go to the top? If you doubt me, then you doubt every climb that has ever been claimed.
Okay. No, we can't do that.
You dare doubt him then,
And as Cordes points out in the book, there is no governing body in climbing. Photos can be iffy. So climbers have generally been taken at their word. But there's such a mountain, pardon the pun, of evidence against Maestri for having done this climb that very few believe he did it. He then went back in 1970, so tortured by the doubters, that he climbed another side of Cerro Torre, and he was sponsored by a gas-powered compressor company, and he took that hunk of junk on the climb with him with three other climbers. He drilled 200 climbing bolts into the difficult part of that route, and he created a ton of controversy because, of course, he left those bolts up there. He even left the compressor. It still hangs on the side of the mountain today.
This a good compressor.
Free compressor there. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
But everybody said, well, you didn't do this by fair means. You brought a compressor with you. So there are a lot of chapters in this book devoted to that. And he was defiant about that as well. And he ended up, until the day he died, which I think was 2019 or something.
Indeed.
Claiming that he made it to the top, and there are a lot of his followers in Italy that believe he made it. It's a great book. There's a lot of technical mountain climbing jargon used that I didn't understand. Gordo, you think it's confusing the way cycling classifies climbs. Well, the way the mountain world classifies climbs, he said, this one stretch of Cerro Torre is a 5.10, but they later encountered a 5.13, which is hard to believe that they could do anything above a 5.12. So I looked at the scale that they use to grade the difficulty of these climbs. It's a 3. It starts at a 3.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes to a 4. Then it goes to a 5.1.
Then it goes to a 7. Then it goes back to a 5.
5.2, 5.3, 5.4, 5.5, 5.6. And it's so confusing.
I'm confused by the 5.10.
Yeah.
How is that different than the 5.1?
You'll have to look. Yeah, it's 5.1, 5.2, 5.3, then it gets to 5.10, and then anything over 5.13 is seen as impossible.
It seems like 5.10 is the same as 5.1.
Not in the climbing world.
It's very confusing.
It's extremely confusing. I would never, ever, 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 ever consider doing a climb like this.
How do you get started?
I just don't think I could. But I love reading about climbs. And he also details all of the other climbs and attempts that were made at Cerro Torre. A lot of disaster there. A lot of incredible stories. This little village that popped up down below the climb. And Cordes is a terrific writer. So I highly recommend, if you like that kind of stuff, my October book of the month called The Tower by Kelly Cordes. And my November book of the month, which I started this week, I'm really excited to review already. It's called Algo Speak. And it's about how language is changing based on algorithms in social media. And I'm one chapter in, and it's fascinating.
Yeah, interesting.